Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Great. So, Kartal, thank you very much for joining the Humans in AI podcast. I appreciate a lot that you were able to make it. I mean, with all this busy life of but yeah, let's start then. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready. Thanks for having me. I appreciate your time as well.
Thank you. I read a little bit about your background of the journey. So I would like to start from there. Okay. Give a little bit of context to our audience about where you come from, how the journey that you've been always doing. You studied software engineering, right? Like computer science, like in the past.
Yeah.
And then you've been a global tech leader for many years already. And now you are in SigTech. Before you were in Cargo and other companies, big companies that you've been as well.
Yeah.
So I would like to... Yeah, if you can take us a little bit to that journey of how you started your passion for technology.
Yeah, I mean, I did my computer science degree here in the States. So I'm born and raised in Istanbul, Turkey. So I'm Turkish by birth. And I came to the States for an undergrad and I did my computer science degree. And earlier on, like I remember still talking to my advisor freshman year with no major selected, doing a little bit of liberal arts of like different things. And that you're strong in like sciences and mathematics. Like we suggest you should like really focus on computer science because we think like that's a growing field. We're still talking about like early 90s, right? I'm probably much older than you guys. Who own and operate this podcast. So early 90s, that's what they suggested. And it was an interesting journey, right? Like I'm growing up in Turkey, like the computers were not, personal computing was not that available. It was super expensive. Only like super rich families could afford it. So the first time that I actually learned how to type was as a sort of an undergrad in a computer science, doing a computer science degree. In my school. So I think like my journey started that way. And then after computer science, I graduated right around like before the year 2000. I don't know if like the Y2K coding rush where we would like, okay. So that's like a year 2000, there was a huge coding rush for updating legacy software because for many reasons that we don't have to deal with today, which comes down to memory and like the storage. The computer programs were written in utilizing two-digit years to compress it. But year 2000, you've turned into 00, right? So the world had to update a bunch of different software. So I was like, that was my first gig. I got hired to do like a bunch of Y2K software upgrades. And then I landed with my job at CNET. And that's where my ad tech journey started unintentionally. I really wanted to get a job at CNET because it was a popular internet company back then. It's still now in its shape, but like back then there was CNET, Yahoo, or AOL. If you wanted to work in an internet company, I got into the advertising technology division within CNET. That's my journey started. And I've been going at the ad tech since then, right? So this is roughly about my 25th year doing advertising technology, media technology. In the space, it's been a good journey. If you like, we can drill into different parts of it. I can talk about it hours and hours, which we don't have probably time for. But I'm happy to dissect any portion of it.
Sure, I found it very interesting. Like you are a tech leader, but you've been doing mostly companies like advertising companies. So how do you end up like this? Doing tech in advertising companies and media. How it happened?
It's advertising. I always found advertising tech fascinating, even as a sort of a entry-level software engineer. And then because of the scale of the problem and the sort of the amount of data even that we dealt with, even in like early 2000s, was massive. right? So we always had to like really think through how to implement things. We always had to think through like algorithmic challenges on like how to solve things. And that kept me going and the industry kept growing. And with that, the amount of data and then the problem space that you're in kept growing. If you think about it, early 2000s, we were like operating on a super expensive hardware and trying to solve hard problems. And you would have to find like really good methods to do it. Then we switched to doing programmatic advertising. If you fast forward to today, right, we're in real time running auctions for ad spaces with a bunch of different buying houses and exchange, figuring out how to auction it, how to price it, what to pay to the publishers, what to pay ourselves, and do all of this in less than a second without interrupting the end user's journey of how they consume that content. It is a huge technological challenge, right? So because of that, like when I got in, I loved the domain. I loved the technical challenge that the domain provided to me as a scientist, as a technologist. So I ended up staying, right? And I did a little bit of e-commerce for a couple of years. But what I realized is like a lot of e-commerce is commerce and then with a little bit of technology associated to it. But like ad tech really gave me an opportunity to be like really think through how to do things in a scalable way. And in a way that does not disrupt the world. Because at the end of the day, the mission is powering the content and powering the free internet in a way, because that is powered by advertising and giving the opportunity for the professional content to be able to consume by you and others on the world for free. And without doing that, without disrupting that journey with the ads that properly placed and it has a low latency. And that I always loved doing that. So I ended up staying in the industry. So I went to PubMatic, which is a very large ad tech company. I went to Cargo when it was a very small tech team and they were trying to switch to a tech player in the industry. So I had an 8-year journey there. So tremendous growth. Now I'm at CTAG. And the world now is a great time because the world is changing so rapidly. The pace and change in the world nowadays is so rapid. And that's going to affect how we do advertising too, right? So that's the thing. Like I've never thought going anywhere or doing something different.
That's great. That I found it very interesting that relationship between the technology and advertising. Like obviously it's actually nowadays technology in everything is crucial. So as a person, as a professional and as a leader that you have a lot of experience already leading as a tech. So now talking about AI, we already kind of talk a little bit about AI. Can you take us back to the moment when AI, you started to focus on AI when you started being for your vision and strategy as a technologist?
Yeah, so machine learning, which is a subset of AI, right, has been in the core of what we do in advertising technology, I would say at least a decade. Right. So when I talk to people about it and give like discussions and give speeches, and when I say it, it's like people are like, what? But like a lot of what we do from trying to figure out if an ad is going to get clicked or not, or if there's an ad that's 2 folds below like the top, whether the user will scroll all the way down there and see that ad or not, or how we predict a price where we can win an auction by paying it. All of this, like very, I would say, traditional tabular machine learning has been at the core of what we do since a very long time. So that's where we like, especially as we shifted into programmatic advertising, like the sort of the machine learning became such a core of what we do. So like we've been like, the industry is not a shy of doing in a way, AI, right? Because to me, AI is an application that has multiple machine learning or otherwise like a software components to it. So we've been doing it, right? Now we talk more about it as an AI because everybody talks about AI. But I quickly, if you're in this industry and you are a leader in this industry, you quickly realize the only way you're going to be able to do things efficiently is, you know, like by having the machine predicting things, but not only predicting things, but predicting it in a very low latency where we have only milliseconds to work with. So you always have to figure out the right models to activate and your offline and online real-time combination. But if you haven't figured that out, you're not going to survive as a company in our industry. So that's why as a technology leader, you have to jump into that and have that AI first or ML first thinking as you approach every single problem that you need to solve.
Yeah, so at SeedTag, so I guess, it's not a guess. Yeah. I believe that you've got a lot of challenges that you have to face,
yeah.
Mostly with building AI and at the same time respecting user privacy, but delivering the real performance. So how do you tackle that?
Yeah, so we tackle the user privacy with the direction we take on what kind of advertising we do. Right, because at the end of the day, we make a conscious choice of doing contextual advertising, right? We care about the content and when and under what conditions that content may be consumed, but we don't care knowing the details, finer details of the user that's consuming that content. So if you think of it like you can take one route, a lot of companies in our industry does, right? So you could say, I'm going to get personally identify information and I'm going to try to see what data sets I can use to know like what this household looks like and maybe the average income of this potential user, right? So that's one way to go. Where we take a stand and say, like, at the end of the day, we don't think that matters for brand advertising because at the end of the day, you are trying to create an affinity generation after generation with your brands. And the way to do that is align it within the best possible context. And we focus on context rather and aligning within a context rather than the user, right? So that then the privacy comes by doing that choice, right? Then our job is to figure out, okay, we're consuming a content now. What is this content is about? What is this article is about? The larger context of the article, what is the imagery looks like, right? And which brands would potentially resonate in this space? What kind of emotions this article may trigger? Is this article is a very detailed review of a running shoe? Then you could drive and say, whoever's reading it, probably reading it by an intent of researching and probably near a shopping, like a sort of a purchase decision, versus if you're reading an article about New York City Marathon, yeah, you may be a running enthusiast, but like you're not at that moment in your time, in your life, maybe looking for a new shoe, right? So we look for these signals. And we care about those contextual signals rather than the users. And that's how we ensure privacy.
Very interesting. So what's a misconception people have about AI in advertising?
I think there's a lot of talk about AI right now in our industry, right? And when one thing right now is when we think about AI and agentic AI and et cetera, the application of it to the industry, there's going to be a lot of different ways of applying it, right? But like the real-time advertising in milliseconds, right? You can't really do that with the generic models or like the larger models that like that sort of published by AI companies that has a general purpose knowledge. Our job, like really what we do is, and where the magic is, that we have domain-specific models, which is focuses on advertising and contextual advertising. And we're able to build those in a way that they can actually predict in milliseconds rather than minutes. So I think like the notion that I see over here is like a lot of companies talk about AI and how they're bringing AI. And a lot of the industry talks about how AI is going to make everything like so easily configurable. But there's a lot of work that still needs to get put in, actually, to activate AI within the environment that we need to work in. So I think that's one of the misconceptions that's out there. There's a lot of workflow, and as there is in every industry, anywhere from, you know, ad operations to generating creatives and et cetera, I think AI will come in and like really transform the industry over the next couple of years, but it is going to take time and it's not going to be overnight. Even though the world is moving really fast, we are still bounded by some of the environments and the constraints of those environments that we need to operate in.
So we still need humans.
It's like, that's a big debate in general, right? Is that, do we, like, and it's not AI specific, right? Do we need humans? Do we not need humans? Do we need software engineers? What kind of software engineers do we need in the future? What roles are changing, right? That's what the entire like world debates right now. I take a point that the humans aren't going away, but I think that the roles and the backgrounds of knowledge needed for certain roles, in my opinion, will change with AI coming in and automating and assisting humans. So I think that's where we're going to see. I take a look at examples, like when I look at the industry at large, right? One example I can give is where I debate in my mind is from an ad operations perspective, right? The industry always look to hire newcomers right off from school who could come in and just operate machines and line items, like optimize advertising campaigns manually. And we hired them in hundreds and thousands across the industry, right? So I think like over time, that role will change. Like I see that role becoming more of like a data scientist or like a light data scientist role that's like enabled by AI assistance so that some of the minutiae of day-to-day, adjusting the pacing and checking the reports and et cetera, is done by AI and the agents, but like the humans are really putting their minds into solving tougher problems. I think like where at large, where I see us as humans and the world is that AI is not here to like really replace us, but AI is here to free us and give us time to focus solving larger problems on our industry or larger problems of humanity in general.
Yeah, that's a kind of very large debate actually about
this. Yeah.
Okay, Kartal. You work across many countries and cultures. So as a tech leader, what do you think, or what is your perspective about what an AI team needs, not just technically, but as well culturally, to thrive in a space like yours, which is more ad tech, right?
I would say this is, in general, what I like to see in all my teams, not just in AI teams. But I think like you cannot replace curiosity. Right. I think like the best teams that I've always led with and the best coworkers I had at my level up, down, right? It was always like people who were like really curious. Not only they were like had the right background, but they were like really curious. They were very inquisitive about details of the problem space and wanted to understand the business metrics, right? It's not about just like building the next model, but what is the problem that you're trying to solve in first place? Understanding that in depth and having the curiosity to wanting to know those details and explore is something that you cannot replace. So I think no matter which culture you're in, and we can get into like how you can be a multicultural company, but like in every culture, I've seen these curious technologists and they make the best of the teams, or like they make everybody around them better too.
That's beautiful. I agree with you about the curiosity. I think it's something, a very human thing that for now, I think I cannot do it for now.
Yeah.
Don't know the future.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to, like, we can debate on when we get into an AGI and all of that stuff. But like you said, we're not there yet. So really, I think you can't replace the curiosity. And I think over the next few years, we're gonna innovate as much faster as a humankind. Because like I said, we're going to have more time in our hands to think about the world and the problems in it.
100%. So, can you share a moment when you are as the leader of your team, and there are a lot of challenges and sometimes projects don't go as we expected, right? How those challenges, or do you have an example of a challenge that really reshape and influence the way that you lead now?
Yeah, I think like bringing it to AI and maybe the data science, I've seen so many challenges, right? So from human challenges to software challenges, and you fail at projects and you learn from them. But bringing it to the sort of a data science, and I have a computer science background. Like I started leading data science teams as a technologist, but I didn't come from a PhD or a data science kind of background. As an early on leader, like I really did not think through the observability and the explainability of what the machine is doing as a sort of a fundamental part of the problem. But it is a big part of the problem. And quickly I realized like spending time into having the right frameworks in place that you can understand what the machine is doing, whether the machine is doing the right thing or the wrong thing, or how well is a machine performing over some very naive brute force method, maybe, right, for prediction. It is a problem that it is a very, like I said, fundamental data science problem. And I think that over the next few years, we would debate that a lot in AI as well, to try to figure out why the machine did what it did, like why the agents, AI agent do that thing rather than another thing, like try to understand and explain the reasoning and the logic behind it. It sounds trivial, but it is not, it takes a lot of time when you're running proper data science teams and you want to do a proper production grade AI. And that's one thing I learned. Then when I think of these problems right now and talk to the younger data scientists and maybe the teams that haven't faced the similar things, I always start talking to them and say, guys, start thinking about observability and explainability first, and then start thinking about how you're going to do the prediction or how you're going to build the best agent. Because at the end of the day, if I look at the results and I can't understand if it's doing anything good for me, then, you know, we haven't accomplished anything. So that's one challenge. And the reason it was a challenge is there was a project back in the day and it took three times more time than we initially estimated. And the majority of the time that really went into trying to figure out like how we explain what the model is doing.
So you've been, and you are, I'm not sure if you are still, advocate for responsible AI and data ethics. So first was why, and what was the moment that you really wanted to commit to those principles, if you are committed?
Yeah, I think that from an advertising perspective, right? Like I said, I love advertising. I love an advertising done really well, right? I watch ad supported versions of the shows. So like the things that, so that I can see the ads and see like how the ads are doing and do my work and everything. But I think like there is a part of the industry that there is a really over usage of data and sensitive data. And then you, like you said, like I said, you pipe that through the machines and models, and they're doing things that maybe sometimes you have a hard time explaining what they're doing. Because of that, I like the whole contextual advertising really resonates with me. It's a very light on personal data, but it is more about the content. And when I think about myself, it's like my perception and my personal perception and reactiveness to advertising really depends on where I'm reading what or what I'm watching at that moment, right? So that's why I took taken this path of, hey, this is what we can do, what we need to do for our industry can be done in a very light data footprint, in a privacy safe way, respecting the end user. And it can be done in a way that it does not disrupt also the end user's content journey. So that's why I've been an advocate of, we don't need to use heavy duty data. We don't need to use personal information. We don't need to know a lot of things about the user's background for what we need to do. So that is my path, right? It's like, I love the industry, but the part of the industry I disagree with on how data and models on that data is used.
So with all these about privacy and the data protection for the users, how do you see AI transforming this part of the ethics and advertising in the next 5 years?
I think I would say it's less about AI, and it's more about how technology is evolving at large and how the end users are getting more and more conscious, and newer generations, the younger generations, are more and more conscious about their privacy. And they know how to make technological choices to protect their own privacy, right? They know there are browsers that can block trackers. They know there are browsers that can block cookies. Like, so the younger generation knows these. My mom wouldn't know, and she wouldn't know how to configure things, right? She's 70 plus years old, but the younger generations know it. So I think that young generations is going to force the industry to do the right thing at the end of the day. In the meantime, I am myself and CTAG as a company, we're trying to make the right choice consciously on behalf of the users who are not as capable of fending for their own privacy and for their own data.
Yeah, I think that the younger generation, I'm not too old, but
yeah,
I say, yeah, it's always like younger than me. I feel like they're way more prepared, actually. They're just born in this AI era. So I think they're more prepared for that already.
Yeah.
Talking a little bit about vision, but before talking about vision and the future, let's talk a little, let's get back to the beginning again. So if you could go back, I give yourself to your younger self an advice before becoming the leader that you are today, what would it be?
That's a good question. I would ask a counter question to you. Would I be my young self today, or would I be my young self in the 1990s? Because the advice that I would give would be potentially slightly different, because the world is a lot different.
So basically,
so what's the choice? Am I a 20-year-old now, just like 18-year-old, 20-year-old, 20-plus-year-old that come out of college or going into college now?
No.
Is that the question?
With the knowledge that you have now, is that if you could go back, being you today, now with the knowledge and experience and wisdom that you've got from all your experiences as a leader all these years, so what would you tell yourself now? Hey, look, you're going to be okay. You're going to be great. Not even okay. You're going to be great, for example.
Yeah, I think one thing that I find in life that's very important is constant learning, right? If I knew everything about what happened over the last 20 years, I would try to teach myself, these are the things that's going to happen. And this is what you should learn to position yourself for it. I think I've been blessed in a way that I come from a background in computer science where the world always evolved over software. And now it's like evolving over AI, which is somewhat software driven, right? But I think it's about continuous learning. It's about curiosity. It's about learning things that you may not be working on a day-to-day basis. Do projects at nighttime just to tickle your brain, trying to solve some problems that you're not getting paid to solve at your daytime, because I think like that's how you like explore and learn the world and figure out how to do things in a different way. And I think one other thing that I would advise myself and advise everybody who's just starting in life is if you have this entrepreneurial spirit, it's easier always to take chances and jumping into the deep end of the pool when you're younger and you have a lesser things to think about in life, right? So the older you get, the higher you get, like the higher you get in the corporate chain or the sort of the work world, the harder it is for you to jump into new things and try different things. So what I encourage everybody, like when like the grads and whatnot come to me and say, hey, like, what do you advise us? I'm like, hey, if you want to do something entrepreneurial, if you have the mind for it, do it now. This is the best time. They like the sort of the more older you get, the more settled you are in life, the harder it becomes. I think that was like maybe one thing. Like I went into a cool internet company, which was CNET, but I spent like about 11 years there because I loved the job and this and that. But like I didn't make a conscious choice of, hey, what does it look to be like if I start my own company, right? Or if I work on my own product. That's one thing that I would advise to myself and say, the time is to do it now and the time is to do it when you're younger and not later in life. Of course, you can always do anything you want across your whole life, but the probability is better for you to take chances when you are earlier in your life. So that's one advice that I would give to myself and to give to everybody at that age, but be curious. Think about problems. Today is like the content that is out there, that the sort of pre-education that's out there is like something we did not have in the 90s, early 2000s, right? Constantly educate yourself, do something like have side projects, have some side hustles, think about building your own companies, right? Those are the advices that I would give to everybody.
Beautiful. And if I was thinking, oh my God, I'm always like, I'm sorry about this question. You were like, whoa. But yeah, you responded very well, I have to say. And I really like your advice. So I've got a last question. This is a bit about the future and it's more about legacy. So what kind of legacy do you hope to leave? Not just as a leader in your company, but as well as human, like a little bit in general, like maybe personal, or if not personal, you can also talk and you can talk a little bit about the legacy you would like to leave in your professional field.
Yeah, I think I go back to something I said. Right? Part of the reason I do this job and do it advertising is enabling the professional, the generated content to the masses of the world, right? So it's like it's something that I think as a humanity today, we take it as granted because we so get used to open internet and the content that's available. But like I look at years down the road and I think through like how my kids who are like 4 and 6 are going to learn about the world, perceive the world, right? Some of the things around like news, the right news, professionally generated news, editorial content is how we like learn what to do in life as humans. And I want to be able to make sure we sustain that as humankind. And I want to make sure like my kids will still have that ability to be able to have a large variety of content to choose from and freely read it. And wherever they are, whichever geography they are in the world. And that to me is the mission, because I think that, like I said, the advertising underwrites that content generation because of the revenue that it generates for the publishers. And I want to make sure we have a free and open internet and we support it for generations to come. So that's that. If I can do a little bit now at this like a pivotal moment of the world where we still have that content and we are able to bifurcate fake content versus the real content and et cetera, and figure out like the sort of the right content to support via advertising. And I see my kids 10 years down the road, they're still have this access available to them, then I would call that my legacy or like my contribution to humanity from what I do on a daily basis.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Kartal. It's been a great interview. I really actually enjoy your insights. I really like actually this, your in the connection between your tech part, but as well as I see you have very good communication skills as well. So it's very easy to talk to you, I have to say. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And thank you very much for being here all this time with me and answering my questions.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human. One story at a time. See you in the next episode.